in a fine dining establishment is the closest many of us will come to being a king. We pick food from a list, someone makes it for us, and then someone else brings it to us. We don't cook, we don't clean up, we just sit there and people serve us like we are characters on Downton Abbey. When we order wine, the bottle is even opened and poured into a glass in front of us so that none of the peasants can poison us. I rarely get to go to fancy restaurants, but when I do, I fully embrace it. Everything seems better in a fancy restaurant. Maybe it's the 5 sticks of butter they use in every dish, but everything is simply more enjoyable. Even a glass of tap water is more pleasing. Ooh, this is good water. Being waited on makes us so self-important, we feel like we can critique the food.
How's your appetizer? Mine's a little rich.
You can't do this when you're having dinner at a friend's house.
I didn't care for the chicken. I don't think we're coming back unless his wife takes some cooking classes.
The royal treatment in a fine dining establishment begins instantaneously when you are ushered to your table by the hostess or maitre d'. The maitre d' becomes the king's guard, and the hostess is a lady-in-waiting who leads the way to your table with beauty and innocence. Upon arriving at your table, you are greeted by your waiter, your personal servant for the night. Usually the waiter will tell you his name. Now that you are a person of royalty, you never give yours. Waiter. Hello, my name's Phil. I'll be your waiter.
You. I'll have the chicken.
I always feel uncomfortable when the waiter gives his name. I never use it.
I'm out of water, Phil. Yoo-hoo, Phil.
Maybe they tell you their name to avoid you addressing them in other ways.
Waiter, slave boy, food bitch. Oh, your name's Phil.
Next, you must determine what exquisite dish is worthy to enter your royal mouth. You are handed the menu, and the waiter begins to recite the chef's specials, like he's announcing the lineup of your personal entertainment for the evening.
First, the jester will perform a lovely... No, I don't want that. Off with his head.
The specials are presented in a semi-conversational manner.
Tonight, we have a coq au vin, that is flambéed. Then there's a pause. I usually nod, but I always wonder, am I supposed to say something? Pass, next.
In an effort to be polite, I exert so much energy, acting like I'm interested in the specials, when I really don't care. That's the soup of the day? Wow, I'm not getting any of these specials. The term special seems a little confusing. Is the chef trying harder on the specials?
He'll cook the stuff that's written down, but he's not going to put any effort into it.
I often think, if the dish is that special, why don't they put it on the menu? By this time, you've been handed your menu, which can come in varying sizes and shapes. Often the menus are unnecessarily oversized, so you feel like you are about to read a bedtime story to a young child. Once there was a prime rib for $65. That's a little scary. In general, I don't know what I'm looking at when I read a menu in a fancy restaurant. I usually recognize every other word. All right, that means beef. I think that is a green leafy vegetable I wouldn't like. When it finally comes time to order, a wave of panic usually crashes over me. It's a similar feeling to the one I have when ordering over the phone, but it's much more intense because I'm face-to-face. What if I order the wrong thing? How adventurous should I be? How can I get Jeannie to order something I would like and then distract her so I can eat it? In an effort to avoid mispronouncing things, I'll just point at items on the menu.
I'll start with point. Then I'll get the this.
If someone orders something I was going to order, I suddenly feel like I have to change my order. I know it's irrational, but I don't want the person to think I'm copying, or I don't want the chef to get bored. The waiter is always there to provide advice and counsel. Hey, waiter, you don't know me, but what do you think I should eat? Is it time for me to get a haircut? It's up to you, because you're a stranger and I'm an idiot. Occasionally, a waiter will strongly recommend something from the menu. I always feel guilty not getting the waiter's recommendation. I know you want me to get that, but I'm going to get what I want, because I'm paying, right? Why don't you back off, Phil? Sometimes when out with a group of friends, you are the last one to decide what you want on the menu. Throughout the ordering process, you keep telling the waiter to skip to the next person. Now he's back to you for the final order, and you still don't know what you want. And everyone is staring at you like you are holding all of them up and ruining the whole night. For me, this is when the real order panic sets in. I feel like I have to make this vital decision in less than a second. So I blurt out the first thing I remember. Burrito Puerto Vallarta. Then it comes and it's like a snail in an egg. I just stare at it in utter disappointment. Hey, anyone want to trade?
When you go out to dinner, it is customary to order an appetizer in addition to the entree. The appetizer is just an excuse for an extra meal.
Let's see, I'll start with the 80 buffalo wings, and do you have a locale blue cheese? Because I don't want to fill up too much.
It would be embarrassing trying to explain what an appetizer is to someone from a starving country. Yeah, the appetizer, that's the food we eat before we have our food. No, you're thinking of dessert. That's the food we have after we have our food. We eat tons of food. Sometimes there's so much we just stick it in a bag and bring it home. Then we throw it out the next day. Maybe give it to the dog.
In most fine dining establishments, a basket of bread is placed on the table. I enjoy bread in everyday life, but for some reason, when I go out to dinner, I suddenly crave bread.
Bread? They've got bread here? Bread suddenly becomes an unusual and fascinating delicacy. Ooh, we should have bread at home. We gotta get the recipe for bread.
I'm not sure whose brilliant idea it was to give customers, often before they order, the most filling food for free.
You want a successful restaurant? Give everyone a basket of bread.
At the end of the meal, right? That way they leave full.
No. Right when they sit down at the table.
Wouldn't they just fill up on the bread?
Exactly.
But then they would order less food.
Exactly.
And I'd make less money.
Trust me.
All right, I'll do it.
Sometimes the bread in the bread basket is so amazing I can't stop eating it. This is usually when the basket of bread is an assortment of different types of fresh, warm bread.
Well, I should try the pretzel bread. Well, I should try that pumpernickel thing. Well, I can't skip the roll. Also, there is always that skinny breadstick in there that you have to eat, because how often do you get to eat a skinny breadstick?
I've eaten an entire basket of bread in restaurants. It could be kind of awkward asking the waiter for seconds on bread.
Yeah, can we have some more of that free bread? Can you cancel my entree? I'm just going to load up on the bread and ice water. Are there other free things here? I prefer the free stuff more.
Most of the time, I really should cancel my entree. I'm rarely hungry when it arrives. It's often a little bit of a surprise when the entree is presented.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's the thing that costs $40, right? Is it too late to unorder it?
I guess I'll just stuff it in while I think about what I'm going to eat for dessert. Other times the wait for the entree feels like an eternity. And when it arrives, you are given a stern warning about the temperature of the hot plate. I sometimes wonder if we are waiting for them to make the plates.
The steak's ready, but the plate's still in the kiln.
On special occasions, while you're eating your entree, the chef will approach the table to see how you are enjoying your meal. You can tell it's the chef because they are usually dressed in some type of white karate outfit. A visit from the chef is a great honor and very generous because, after all, they are in the middle of their workday. It's the equivalent of me stopping during my stand-up show and approaching a couple in the fourth row. How do you like the joke so far? Well, enjoy. I usually awkwardly tell the chef everything is great, praying he or she will go away. What else could you say? I thought it'd be better, but hey, you know, I'm here. Don't worry, I'll still pay. It's usually after the second bite of your entree that your waiter approaches and asks, "Can I interest any of you in dessert?" My first thought is he trying to kill us? I haven't been hungry in an hour. For some reason, when you go out to dinner, no one wants to be the one to order dessert. After eating a basket of bread and two courses of food, suddenly you decide you don't want to overdo it. There's usually someone who wants to share dessert. Hey, you want to share a dessert? Let's share a dessert. Why don't you get your own damn dessert?
Oh, I just want a bite, just a bite.
Then the dessert arrives and they turn into a vacuum. Apparently it was a bite from a shovel.
Yeah, I have a bit of a sweet tooth.
No, you're a pathetic sugar fiend.
I love that phrase. I have a sweet tooth.
I always want to say, you're ordering it for your tooth? That's interesting because it's going straight to your butt.
I think your butt owes your tooth an explanation.
I guess we all have our own way of rationalizing. In defense of the friend with the sweet tooth, no one has ever really needed dessert. Who's the first guy to ask for dessert?
That was a good meal. I'm full. You full?
Good.
Let's eat a cake.
Following dessert and the necessary after-dinner coffee needed to provide you with the energy to move so you can eventually leave the restaurant, the check arrives. Your waiter always seems to delicately place the check on the table like he had nothing to do with it.
Some guy over there gave me this to give to you.
The check is often in some type of leather folder, like some kind of award. What did I win? Bankruptcy. When you see the bill, you are reminded why the check comes at the end of the meal, when you are too full to run away. It can be startling how large a check can be when you go out to dinner. How can it be that much? Did someone order furniture? I remember the first time I paid when I went out to dinner. I was in my 20s. I thought to myself, I have a job. I'm going to go out for a fancy dinner. Then the check came, and all I could think was, I'm moving home. I need Mommy and Daddy to pay for everything. The whole experience of going out to dinner is amazing until that moment the bill arrives. Your relationship with your waiter has gone from, who is this stranger talking to me, to, he's not our waiter, he's our friend, to, this guy is the reason we won't be able to send our children to college. When the check comes, the illusion shatters. You are never the king. You are just another John in a fancy food whorehouse. Non-royal treatment. Of course, most of my eating outside the home experiences are not at fancy restaurants. I'm normally in a hurry to eat or else on the road somewhere, so usually I end up in a place where it's less of an elegant adventure and more of a transaction. I'm just buying my food and sitting down and eating it. Sometimes I'm even standing up and eating it. Home style. Sometimes after a show, there's nothing open except the place across from my hotel that offers home-style cooking. I never really understood the appeal. When I go out to dinner, I want restaurant-style cooking. When I hear home-style, I always think of some guy in his underwear standing next to a microwave.
You want me to nuke a hot dog for you? I got some old Chinese in the fridge, but I think it's my roommate's.
Dining al fresco. When people find out I live near Little Italy in New York City, they will often say, Little Italy, you must eat well. I never understood that logic. It's not like they're giving the food away. Sadly, most of the food in Little Italy is not even the best Italian food. And most of the restaurants are tourist traps, not even run by Italians. To maintain the illusion of authenticity, many of these not really Italian restaurants have quaint little outdoor seating sections on the sidewalk in front of the restaurant entrance. When the Italian-looking Albanian waiter asks you if you would rather be seated indoors or dine al fresco, literally in the fresh air, like it's some alluring vacation destination, you gladly choose the latter. After all, when pretending to be in Rome, do as the pretending to be Romans do. Once you are seated, you quickly realize that al fresco in New York actually means eating outside while you watch two drunk guys from Long Island yell at each other as a homeless man rummages through a garbage can. Diners. There are different types of diners, but generally they all embrace the simple approach to mediocre food. There seems to be an almost deliberate lack of creativity. Don't get me wrong, I love diners. I love the booths, the subpar coffee, and the laminated menus that feel like a catalog of every dish ever conceived of by humans. I usually want to ask, to save time, can you just tell me the food you don't serve here? The diner menu's description of food items is so hyperbolic that it borders on sarcasm, world's greatest tuna melt. I especially love the diners that decorate their walls with actors' headshots. Wow, look at all these people I've never heard of who have eaten this mediocre food. Truck stops. See diners, but add in mud flaps and showers. Food trucks. The chuck wagon of today. The food truck always looks to me as if it's wandered away and gotten lost from the rest of the caravan. I've been separated from my group. I'm selling coffee to raise money to help me find them. I don't really understand the appeal of a food truck. It is a truck, right? Are we supposed to be eating stuff served out of trucks? If they give you food poisoning, they have the ability to flee the scene quickly. I call them poison and run trucks. Street fairs. In order to increase traffic and block the entrance to perfectly good restaurants during the summer, most large American cities have street fairs. Suddenly, food that is normally eaten only by drunk people is being sold in broad daylight, and sober folk are lining up to pay too much for it. I like to think of street fairs as stationary parades that are pretty insensitive to the homeless. Sorry you have to live on the street, but we're having a party! Can you move your box-slash-house-bed thing? Thanks. The barbecue. There are other times when you leave your home to eat, and you are not actually paying for your food. I'm not talking about the fancy dinner party or the casual meal at a friend's house. I'm talking about being invited to a barbecue. This gathering is a popular tradition in the summer months. You do not even have to know the host that well to be invited. As soon as it gets warm, everyone suddenly has an uncontrollable desire to break out the grill and invite all their friends and friends of friends over for an obnoxious amount of food in their backyard. People are usually expected to bring something to a barbecue. As a result of this disorganized assignment, there are never enough buns and an inordinate amount of disgusting mayonnaise-based salads, complete with their own clouds of flies. I know people love an outdoor barbecue, but to me it just means let's make the food more accessible to insects. I mean, I enjoy wind blowing a plate of potato salad on my shirt as much as the next guy, but whenever I'm at an outdoor barbecue, I always think, this would be so much better if it were indoors. I realize I'm a man and I should love outdoor grilling, but eating, cooking, or even being outdoors just feels counterintuitive to me. There's just too much standing. International relations. The term ethnic food is relative, of course. Germans don't think of German food as ethnic. I guess ethnic is code for exotic or unfamiliar food. I grew up in a small town in Indiana where my father's favorite ethnic restaurant was a place called Giovanni's that sold exotic dishes like spaghetti and chicken parmesan. I was raised on Wonder Bread, which is probably the whitest of the white breads. Frankly, I'm not even sure if Wonder Bread is bread. I don't think bread is supposed to catch on fire or be used to remove makeup. Anyway, my point is, I grew up thinking most food was ethnic food. Asian food. Asian food, or as 60% of the Earth's population refers to it, home-style cooking, is exotic, diverse, and amazing to me. Understandably, there are innumerable varieties and styles covering the enormous and culturally varied continent that is Asia. Having only a couple of paragraphs dedicated to Asian food is a little obnoxious, but then again, this book is titled Food: A Love Story, not Food: An Anthology. Here's what I love about Asian food. Thai. The best Asian food is undeniably Thai food. Congratulations, Thailand. I'm sure as a country you were waiting to learn what an out-of-shape pale guy from the other side of the planet thought of your food. I think Buddha was so peaceful and fat because of the Thai food. There are almost too many good dishes coming from Thailand. Pad Thai, Massaman curry, and tons of other stuff I only know as numbers on a menu all come from Thailand. The Thai even figured out a way to make string beans delicious. The Thai combination of sweet, sour, hot, and spicy is incredible, really. I would be so fat if I lived in Thailand or near a Thai restaurant. Oh, wait, I do. Well, at least now I know why I'm fat. Indian. I entirely agree with the Hindus in their belief that cows are sacred. Yet for some reason, beef is rarely an ingredient in Indian food. Thank God I'm not Hindu. Beyond a doubt, Indian food is the best non-beef food on the planet, which I feel is almost an impossible task. Indian food is either on the edge of too spicy or lethally hot. It's no wonder that Indian food also boasts the most delicious variety of breads offered at a single meal. We all know eating tons of different types of bread is the best way to effectively eat super hot food. I'm a fan of any culture that is brilliant enough to justify this kind of bread eating. Korean. I'm normally not a fan of restaurants where they ask me to do the cooking. I view fajitas as the IKEA of Mexican food. Oh, you want me to put my taco together myself? Okay. That being said, I'm a huge fan of Korean barbecue. It's like a self-serve Benihana, where for some reason they don't allow me to toss knives. Chinese. Given that the Chinese restaurant near my hometown growing up had a Chicago Bears poster hanging in it, and no employees of Chinese descent, I like to think of myself as a Chinese food expert. Supposedly eating Chinese food means you'll be hungry in an hour. This is a ridiculous statement, because after eating any food, I'm hungry in an hour. My family and I live near Chinatown in New York City. Like most Chinatowns throughout North America, there are live seafood tanks in the windows of many of the restaurants. Often I look at the windows filled with crabs and lobsters swimming in murky water and think, do you want us to come in there, or are these sea monsters protecting your establishment? 'Cause I am scared. I eat a lot of Chinese food. One of the many things I admire about the Chinese that not only will they eat anything, but they have an uncanny ability to make seemingly disgusting things taste good. The best example of this would have to be oxtail soup. That doesn't sound appetizing. Hey, you know how you'd never want to eat an ox? Well, how about the tail? Yeah, the thing it swats flies away from its butt with. Well, what if we put that in a murky soup where you wouldn't be able to tell what was in there, but you'd at least know there was a tail in there? Sounds good, huh? Chinese food is the most deliverable of all ethnic foods. Sometimes when I order Chinese delivery, it comes too quickly. I've been on the phone ordering from our local Chinese restaurant, and the food has arrived while I was ordering. Yeah, I'd like to order the general... Ding dong! Oh, it's here already. How'd you know I even wanted... Chinese food seems to be the fastest to prepare, but the slowest to eat. I prefer the Chinese restaurants that have the silverware on the table when you arrive, because there's nothing more humiliating than starting with chopsticks and having to turn to the waiter and be like, I'm too white. Do you have a shovel back there? Chopsticks are fun, but I'd rather eat than play Operation. I always found it interesting that in China they use chopsticks, but in Russia they use forks. Does it change at the border? Are there some border towns where it's mixed? I imagine the different groups don't get along.
I don't want to eat with them fork users.
I could see a real Romeo and Juliet story coming out of one of those fork chopstick border towns. I have a lot of respect for the Chinese, and I'm not just saying this because in 6 months we're all going to be working for them. The Chinese have a truly amazing culture. Supposedly 3,000 years ago, they were performing brain surgery in China. Yet they still haven't figured out dessert. There are endless food choices on the menu in a Chinese restaurant, but no real dessert. I'm not counting those fancy Chinese restaurants that have sticky buns or that tea ice cream that tastes like a pack of menthol cigarettes. I'm talking about a regular generic Chinese restaurant where there are typically two dessert options. The first is sliced oranges. Wow, I don't want to overwork the kitchen. Oranges, where'd you get these? You know, did a schooner just arrive from the Caribbean? Looks like our scurvy's cured, fellas. The other choice is the fortune cookie, which is not even a Chinese thing, really. Fortune cookies are an American invention, and we gave it to them. The Chinese were probably like, we don't want it. And we were like, it's now part of your ethnic identity. Part of me feels like the fortune in every fortune cookie should just read, you are about to eat a stale cookie. Hey, my fortune came true. It's almost like they wait for the cookies to get stale. When were these made? 1984? Let's wait a little longer. Everyone seems to have the same reaction to fortune cookies. We all think these things are so silly. What a ridiculous concept. Hey, wait, what's mine say? Like there's some ancient wisdom in that cookie that will provide guidance for our lives. As if Confucius himself were putting a tiny piece of paper into a tiny typewriter. Happiness is, a long journey? I'll put some numbers here. Let's see. 17, 38, looks at watch, 12. Put this in a stale cookie. I do feel sorry for the baker who created the cookie that ended up being the fortune cookie. He was probably initially pretty proud. Oh, you have to try my new cookie I created. Tell me what you think of it.
Okay. Interesting. You know what this could use? Paper. This would be good for holding a note. Maybe like a fortune or a recipe for a good cookie.
How much could I charge for them?
I'd give them away with a check. You got a spit bucket around here?
My longtime companion. It's amazing how our attitude toward fast food places changes over our lifetime. When you're a kid, a fast food restaurant is one of your favorite places ever. A stop at McDonald's or a Burger King is like a visit to a toy store or Disney World. What's for a kid not to like? Bright colors, french fries, an indoor playground. You even get a free toy with your meal. No wonder I begged to have my 9th birthday party at McDonald's. But as an adult, a practical wisdom sets in, and we see fast food places for what they really are. A place for convenient, mediocre, super unhealthy food. We view fast food places like they're someone we used to date. You drive by and look at them like, I can't believe I went there. Then a couple nights later, you find yourself at their doorstep. It's late, I'm drunk. How about one for old time's sake? As sober adults, we are embarrassed to eat in a fast food restaurant. We sit by ourselves, hunched over our food in a manner that communicates hurried desperation. Don't tell my wife I'm here. I'm convinced that if ski masks were sold in fast food places, they would be a bigger seller than french fries. Most regular restaurants try to set a mood or atmosphere. French restaurants may have a quaint garden. Some Italian restaurants make you feel like you've been transported to a Tuscan villa. The atmosphere in a fast food establishment looks like they are trying to recreate the environment of a mental institution. The bright lights, the smell of bleach, the employees with the smile and personality of kidnapped victims. And for some reason, the furniture is bolted down. Oh, good, I'm eating in a place that also appeals to a segment of the population that is likely to steal furniture from restaurants. It almost seems like fast food places are attempting to stage a scene from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but with milkshakes. They should just make everyone dress in robes. The food is even served in paper wrappers so we don't try to hurt ourselves. The fast food industry knows that many of us don't want to be seen in their establishments or eating their food, which is why the drive-thru was created. The drive-thru is the fast food industry's way of saying, look, no one has to see you. Just drive around back and we'll hand the food out the window. You can eat in your car. The drive-thru is a pretty convenient idea, except for that final arm stretch you have to do to get your food. I always ask, can you bring your building closer to my car? Of course, every aspect of the fast food experience is constructed around convenience. In a way, they've ruined how I view dining in a normal restaurant. Me. Let's see, I will order the cheeseburger. Where is it? Waiter. Sir, how would you like that burger done? Right now. Where is it? Place your request with the chef. Can you have the chef wrap the burger in paper so I feel like I'm opening a present? Or maybe put it in a styrofoam clamshell and present it to me like an engagement ring? Then we can do that scene from Pretty Woman. How about it? The food. After a lifetime of going to fast food places, I've come to the conclusion that the only food that can be prepared quickly is food that is bad for you. Anyone over the age of 8 knows eating fast food is a form of killing yourself. I'm still waiting for a burger named the Euthanasia. If you're going to a fast food place, you're probably not that concerned about your health. The latest trend or court order of posting nutritional charts provides us with no new information. Wait, since when are French fries unhealthy? The food at fast food places is so unhealthy, it's not even considered odd that milkshakes are offered as a beverage with your meal.
Well, I shouldn't, but I'll have a cheeseburger and fries. And to drink, I'll have the ice cream you can drink through a straw. Do you have an EKG machine back there?
Looking for Mr. Good Burger. You can't talk about fast food without crediting the hamburger and fries. It's what fast food empires like McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's were built on. Even fast food places that don't serve burgers and fries know they are the odd ones. Taco Bell had an ad slogan begging us to think outside the bun. The baffling success of Subway was basically constructed on not selling burgers and fries. Eat Fresh was a creative apology for not having French fries. McDonald's. I like to tell people I go to McDonald's. As a matter of fact, I like to tell people I go to McDonald's more than I actually like going to McDonald's. I just love how people respond. There's sometimes a shocked silence, like I just admitted to support dogfighting. How could you? Occasionally, people will give a smirk that says, oh, I didn't know I was better than you. These pompous responses are because no one admits they go to McDonald's. McDonald's sells roughly 6 billion burgers a day, and there are only 300 million people in this country. I'm not a calculus teacher, but I figure some of these people are lying. I have to admit that many times a cloud of depression appears over me when I enter a McDonald's. In my head, I hear the sound of a buzzer, like I got something wrong on a game show. Not equipped to be an adult. The worst is when I'm in a McDonald's and I see a friend. I always think, oh, crap. Then, like the brave man that I am, I try to hide behind a garbage can. I am always seen. My friend never seems to be in there for the food. Oh, I'm just here for the ATM. What are you doing here, Jim? Not wanting to embarrass and humiliate myself by admitting I'm there for the food, I would say, oh, I'm just meeting a hooker. He should be here by now. We all know how bad McDonald's is for us. We've all read the articles and seen the documentaries. It's the same message. Look, McDonald's is really bad for you. It's very high in fat and calories, and we don't even know where the meat comes from. We all respond with the same shock and disgust right before we bite into our juicy Big Mac. There is a McDonald's denial, and we embrace it. We all know McDonald's is like a casino for heart disease, yet we gamble we can beat the house odds. I'm feeling lucky. I'm going to double down on the quarter pounder, and I'll raise my digestive system a shake. No one goes into McDonald's innocent. We're walking into a red and yellow building with a giant M over it.
Oh, what's this, a library? Oh, well, what a surprise. It's actually a McDonald's. Well, I guess I might as well get some fries while I'm here.
It's hard to be in a McDonald's and not order the fries. They are that good. I try to rationalize eating them.
Well, these fries are too thin to have calories.
Has your mom ever made anything as good as a McDonald's fry? Not even close. No sane adult has ever had too many McDonald's fries. There never seems to be enough of them. You can see confused people in McDonald's after they finish their fries. They always look around their tabletop like their fries disappeared into thin air. What happened? Then they'll scrounge in the bag for the fry crumbs, or that loose fry at the bottom of the bag, or as I call it, the bonus fry. Sometimes there's a bonus fry in the bag when you order the apple pie. The bonus fry is just the dividend for all the good deeds you've ever done. It's like Jesus is up in heaven and decided, you know what? Give him an extra fry. He'll pay it forward. The bonus fry is never a regular size fry. It's always extra long.
Bonus fry? How did I not see you?
You deserve your own ketchup packet. You savor that last fry, turning it into multiple bites.
I'll catch up with you guys later. I got a bonus fry.
McDonald's fries are truly amazing for roughly about 8 minutes. Then the fries turn into something that's likely not biodegradable. They become edible cold shoelaces. We've all made the mistake of reheating McDonald's fries in the microwave, transforming them into packing peanuts. This, of course, does not stop me from eating them. McDonald's fries can't get cold, and McDonald's milkshakes can't get warm. Once I left the chocolate shake outside for an hour, and reality set in. It was definitely not a milk product. The contents turned into some kind of disgusting chocolate mucus. However, by the time I finished the shake, I got used to it. McDonald's has many strange McProducts with broad appeal, but the oddest has to be the McRib. I'm not sure why a McRib is even called a McRib. There's no rib in there. The overly processed pork is shaped to look like ribs and then covered in barbecue sauce and two pickles. If the McRib patty's resemblance to a bloated futon with ripples was meant to be visually disturbing, it worked. I guess they decided against naming it the McPork or McGlob. If the name or shape weren't odd enough, the McRib has a strange here-today, gone-tomorrow existence. Like a serial deadbeat dad, the McRib arrives with great fanfare, only to skip town without warning. Children have a strange obsession with McDonald's. Even kids who have never been to McDonald's or seen a McDonald's commercial want to go there. No one knows how they found out about McDonald's. Most children's first complete sentence is, "Can we go to McDonald's?" It's almost as if children are born with an innate love of McDonald's. She has her mother's eyes and her father's love of McDonald's. Growing up, I was so used to McDonald's soft serve, I was disappointed when I first tried a scoop of real ice cream. Well, this is okay, but it's too hard. How do they even get it through that pump? Wouldn't these scooped balls clog it? The things that appeal to children about McDonald's are innumerable. The clown, the playground, the colors of a nursery school, and of course, the Happy Meal. I'm not sure why they call it a Happy Meal when it seems to turn children into monsters. Can we go to McDonald's? Can we? Can we? Well, after that, can we? Children get a free toy with a Happy Meal. I didn't even get a napkin at home when I was growing up. We are setting our children up with false expectations. In San Francisco, they made the Happy Meal illegal, a decision that caused a backlash because it was a sad day for freedom when a parent no longer had the right to poison his or her own child. The strange obsession McDonald's has with children is kind of creepy. Hey, kid, come in here and Uncle McDonald will give you a toy. My kids only want the damn toy. On road trips, they beg for the Happy Meal, get the free toy, and then don't eat the food, some free toy. Given all children's obsession with McDonald's, we shouldn't be surprised that their spokesman is a clown. In a way, it feels like they're mocking us, the consumer.
Who should our spokesman be? Burger King has a king.
Doesn't matter. These idiots are going to come here no matter what.
How about a rat?
Nah, not a rat. Too cute. What really freaks out little children more than a rat?
A witch? A clown? A weatherman?
Let's go with a clown with a creepy weatherman vibe.
McDonald's used to have a whole group of spokespeople. The Hamburglar, Grimace, Mayor McCheese, and others. I was never sure what Grimace was or why he was named after a painful facial expression. Maybe he represented the look on everyone's face after they ate McDonald's. Whatever the case may be, all the spokesmen disappeared except for Ronald McDonald. I think we have our suspect. Someone needs to call Detective Olivia Benson. Maybe they did a reality show elimination of spokespeople and Ronald won. More likely, it was a Destiny's Child situation. Ronald was the breakout. The entertainment manager for the McDonald's characters was like, hey, you guys are all great. Grimace, Hamburglar, Mayor, we love what you guys do, but we're thinking of going with just Ronald for a while. Maybe we'll do a reunion tour at some point. All clowning aside, somehow McDonald's gets us in there. We know those McDonald's commercials are not realistic. I'd just like to see one commercial that showed people 5 minutes after they've actually eaten McDonald's. Ugh, now I need a cigarette. I deserve a cigarette break today. Yet we keep going back because the one thing McDonald's does well besides fries is consistency. You know how much it's going to cost. You know how long it's going to take. You even know how sick you're going to feel after you eat it. We are also lured in by McDonald's deals that are so good they seem cruel. Two Big Macs for $2? I drive by and think, well, I don't want to lose money on this. I'll get 80 of them. We are further lured by promotional games like Monopoly, even though we have no possibility of winning. I got Boardwalk. All I need is 63 more pieces. You know, I could probably make some money here. During the Olympics, commercials tell us that eating at McDonald's is a way of winning free food and supporting Team USA. It's like our own private decathlon of unhealthy eating. There also used to be McDonald's gift certificates. There was even a commercial where people were hanging McDonald's gift certificates on their Christmas tree, just as Jesus would have wanted. When I was 10 years old, I was actually given McDonald's gift certificates for Christmas by my mom. Yes, my own mother. I guess she couldn't find gift certificates for a vending machine. I like to think it was her way of saying, Merry Christmas, here are some coupons for poison. McDonald's introduced the gift certificate prior to the obesity epidemic. I'm not saying that McDonald's gift certificates caused the obesity epidemic, but in retrospect, the timing is kind of suspicious. It was a more innocent time back then. I remember there was another commercial where a kid gave Santa Claus a gift certificate. These days, there would probably be public outrage and a demand that Santa be given a gym membership instead. It's abusive and enabling to give that to an obvious food addict. I'm sure some of you are listening to this and thinking, sorry, white trashy guy, I don't eat at McDonald's. I have friends who brag to me about not going to McDonald's. I would never go to McDonald's. I always think, well, McDonald's wouldn't want you because you're a jerk. I'm tired of people acting like they are better than McDonald's. You may have never set foot in a McDonald's, but you have your own McDonald's. Maybe instead of buying a Big Mac, you read Us Weekly. That's just a different type of McDonald's. It's just served up a little differently. Maybe your McDonald's is telling yourself your Starbucks Frappuccino is not a milkshake. Or maybe you watch those Real Housewives of some large city shows. It's all McDonald's. McDonald's of the soul. Momentary pleasure followed by incredible guilt, eventually leading to cancer. We all have our own McDonald's. It may take me a decade to digest my quarter pounder with cheese, but that tramp stamp is forever. In a way, it's all McDonald's out there in our society. Why can everyone name three people who have dated Jennifer Aniston? It's McDonald's, and we gobble it up just like those McDonald's fries. Who's she dating now? I know I shouldn't, but it's so salty. Is she pregnant yet? That's not even my business. Scarlett Johansson got a haircut. Why do I care? Because it's McDonald's. McDonald's are the soul. By the way, if you actually care about the British royal family, that's Burger King. That's not even our gossip. I truly enjoy the societal outrage directed at McDonald's.
McDonald's food has no nutritional value. There's no vitamins.
I always imagine McDonald's confused reaction to be, excuse me, we sell burgers and fries. We never said we were a farmer's market. Heck, our spokesman is a pedophile clown from the 70s. What do you want from us, America? We treat McDonald's horribly. We behave like hormonal teenagers dealing with their parents. I hate you. You're gross. When's dinner? I have some friends coming over. Really, going to McDonald's is similar to attending a family reunion. You're initially always excited to go. This is going to be great. Then after you're there for a while, you think, I don't know if I should be here. Then when you're driving back from the family reunion, you're thinking, I'm going to kill myself. I can't believe I had to eat with that clown in the room. We shouldn't be so ungrateful. McDonald's has given us so much. We wouldn't even know when breakfast ends without McDonald's. I'd be eating eggs at 5 p.m. like a moron. Thank you, McDonald's. How would we know St. Patrick's Day is coming up without the Shamrock Shake? Thank you, McDonald's. Who's going to keep all the cardiac surgeons employed? Thank you, McDonald's. Burger King. The thin, healthy, smart people are really missing out on some horrible food at Burger King. It's so ironic that Burger King is called Burger King when McDonald's is the true king of burgers. Burger King is the imposter king. I realize there are likely Burger King fans listening to this right now who vehemently disagree, but my whole view towards Burger King seems to be an ongoing, what are they thinking? It's not as if I have that high of standards for fast food places, but it seems like Burger King purposely does it worse. Like when they are planning the recipe for their burgers and fries, the taste testers are saying, no, this tastes too good. It has to be way more flavorless. Remember our motto, not as good as McDonald's. Let's stick with that, people. Recently, Burger King, a place that sells mostly burgers and fries, introduced the French fry burger, a burger with fries tucked underneath the top bun. Now, I know this concept has been done very well in some of my favorite regional sandwich shops, but on a burger at a fast food place, it seems staggeringly uncreative. How lazy do they think we are? I'm pretty sure every single fast food consumer at one time in their life put some French fries on a burger, usually when they were 8. Not a proud moment in anyone's life, but at least we didn't dedicate millions of advertising dollars towards telling people that it was an innovative new product called the French fry burger. I think you can order extra shame with that French fry burger. I guess have it your way means have it the way you thought of doing it when you were 8. Wendy's. If McDonald's is the one true king of burgers, then Wendy's is the kingslayer. Wendy's is just my all-time favorite of the big fast food chains. It's the high-end McDonald's. In my heart, I know it's fast food, but I always think of Wendy's as a real restaurant. They have a salad bar, chili, and free crackers. Maybe it's the fresh, never-frozen ground beef. Maybe I'm drawn in by the old-fashioned slogan. Maybe it's the smiling face of the sweet red-haired girl looking at me like, "Hi, I'm pale too. I'm your people. Now come on in and make yourself at home." Wendy's is the other woman in my life, playing hard to get with her delicious frosty. Wendy's frosties, like the White Witch in Narnia, are dangerous. They are too thick to be a shake, and served in a cup so that we can deny we are eating 6 scoops of melted ice cream. The Wendy's frosty goes down way too fast and easy. I've yet to eat a Frosty without getting a crippling brain freeze, or as I call it, the Frosty headache. Wendy's is the best. I sometimes walk by Wendy's and think, shoot, I wish I didn't just eat, but then I just get a double anyway. White Castle. Some people make fun of White Castle, and these people are called everyone. White Castle is just too easy of a target for comedy. They are famous for their sliders, and their initials are WC, as in water closet. Insert punchline. Sack is an actual unit of measure in the kingdom of White Castle, as well as the way you will measure yourself after eating at White Castle. You can get a sack of sliders, a sack of chicken rings, a sack of clam dippers, and of course a sack of fish nibblers. Are they serious? I'm not describing the products sold at the Krusty Krab and a SpongeBob episode. These products are really on the menu at White Castle, along with, for some reason, applesauce. I assume the applesauce is made fresh in individual restaurants with the same utensils used to make the clam dippers. If any place is up to code on cleanliness, it's White Castle. Good old White Castle applesauce. I'm sure I'm not the only person who thought to himself, I could go for some applesauce. Well, off to White Castle. I recently walked into the White Castle near beautiful Penn Station in New York City for lunch because I care that little about being alive. It had been a couple of decades since my last visit to the kingdom, so I was surprised to see that White Castle was still in business and even open during the day. I just assumed White Castles were legally allowed to be open only during those early morning hours after all the bars in the city had closed, since there is a direct correlation between binge drinking and eating at White Castle. I was even more shocked to discover that the Penn Station White Castle offered seating for people to eat the White Castle food in the restaurant. I'd never seen this before. I always assumed White Castle intentionally didn't provide seating because they didn't want you in the room when the sliders kicked in. There are many other fast food burger chains. Here's a quick overview. In-N-Out, the California Shake Shack, amazing fast food burger, which is actually embraced by celebrity chefs and the good-looking me. Any place where you can get a burger animal style cooked in a thin layer of mustard is a place of magic. Steak and Shake. This is one of the better ones, but it could be that I'm just imagining it because the name is so good. Jack in the Box. You have to admire the audacity of a place that serves a burger with something called Jack sauce. Roy Rogers. Roy Rogers was one of America's favorite cowboy singers. I only view Roy Rogers as a place to go when I'm looking for a fast food place more disappointing than Burger King. Sonic, Rally's, Checkers. These places are great for people who really like to eat in their car. Whataburger. The Texas Carl's Jr. Carl's Jr. The West Coast Whataburger. Hardee's. The Southern Carl's Jr. Comida Rápida. Given the power and beauty of Mexican food, it is surprising how few great Mexican fast food chains exist. For every Chipotle, there are a dozen Del Tacos. Of course, Mexican fast food would not exist without Taco Bell. Taco Bell. I don't normally fall for expert testimonials in advertising, but Taco Bell's most well-known spokesman was a dog. The Taco Bell dog would say, "Yo quiero Taco Bell," which means, "I want Taco Bell." Sure, it's cool they found and hired a talking dog that spoke Spanish, but it's not that impressive of an endorsement considering it came from a dog and dogs will eat just about anything, including their own throw-up. I'll never forget when I found out about the death of the Taco Bell dog. It was announced on CNN, and I remember telling myself, wow, real journalism is dead. It seems Taco Bell will do just about anything to get people into their restaurant, or more specifically, their room with a microwave in it. None of the food is cooked at Taco Bell. It is reheated and assembled on site. Taco Bell is fundamentally one step up from an office break room. For a while, there was a commercial actually promoting the Taco Bell diet, which I'm pretty sure was constructed on the belief that once you eat Taco Bell, you won't want to eat again. If you're going to Taco Bell for your diet, you have a bigger problem than your weight. I need a hero. Sandwich and sub shops have emerged as strong fast food players. They can range in quality from Panera to Blimpies, but I still prefer a burger and fries. Here are two notable sandwich chains. Subway. Subway is just the McDonald's of delis. It is a fast food sandwich shop that has positioned itself as the healthy alternative to burger and fry places, which is already a turnoff for me. Previously, I brought up the Subway slogan, "Eat fresh," but if you've bitten into a Subway sandwich, you mostly think, "Not so fresh." Subway shops seem to be everywhere. It's hard to walk a block in a major city without passing a Subway restaurant. You probably walked by and breathed in the bread exhaust that is pumped into the street. I always think, ah, the smell of bread that was just cooked in a dirty dishwasher. I never know if it's making me hungry or concerned about the ozone. All this being said, I still go to Subway, and not just because it's fun watching a clinically depressed person throw together my sandwich. They are assembling my sandwich right in front of me. You'd think they'd do it with a little bit of flair. I'm not expecting the enthusiasm of a Benihana chef, but it always seems a little awkward while they sloppily slap the ingredients onto the bun. I usually stand there wishing the sneeze guard were facing the other way as I watch them do everything in those plastic CSI gloves. Those plastic gloves are always a little suspicious because They're wearing them before they even start on my sandwich. Let me just ring up this other guy's order, tie up this garbage bag, and scoop up these heroin needles. Now, what type of triangle of cheese would you like on your sub? There are mice that would turn down that triangle slice of cheese at Subway. If you prefer your cheese melted, you can get your sandwich heated up in the crumb-filled toaster oven it appears someone stole from a dorm room. The Subway toaster oven always makes me wonder, wait, is this even a restaurant? Subway is another place that shows you how lazy we've gotten in our society. I can understand the appeal of fast food burgers and fries. Who has the time to make a burger? Who owns a deep fryer? But we are too lazy to make a sandwich?
I could make a sandwich at home for like 20 cents, or I could watch a sociopath make it.
To be fair, the Subway employees are not sociopaths, but they do have that kind of faraway look in their eyes as they hold the squirt bottle of goo.
In my country, I was attorney general. Would you like Santa Fe sauce?
You have to go through a bunch of steps before your sandwich is ultimately slid into that plastic Subway air sickness bag. The first step is you have to pick out your bread. And by that, I mean pick out the color of your bread, because all the Subway bread seems to taste the same. Do I want the whole wheat colored bread or the Italian colored bread? After you select your bread, you must identify the toppings you would like on your sandwich. Subway makes a big deal how all the toppings are free at Subway. Free lettuce? No way! How do you guys pay the rent? What's next? Free napkins? I think the toppings are free at Subway to distract us from the fact we should not be paying for the meat. Once I asked a Subway guy, is that chicken or a really old piece of ham? Subway is also very stingy with their undesirable meat. It's pre-portioned and peeled off like a mafia kingpin wannabe handing out dollars. Here's three slices of ham. Get yourself something nice, all right? Don't say I didn't do nothing for you. Subway, like other fast food restaurants, always has deals that they advertise as an incentive for eating at Subway. I had to hire a witch doctor to get the $5 footlong jingle out of my head. I like cheap deals as much as anyone else, but I wish they would keep the word foot out of my food. Someone told me they saw a Subway with a drive-thru. I'm not sure how that would even work.
All right, pick out your bread. Now drive up 6 inches. What kind of meat? Drive up 6 inches. Lettuce, onions. Oh, you want it toasted? You gotta circle back around.
Have you tried the soup at Subway? I'm not talking about the tuna salad. I always get the tuna sub at Subway, where they ladle out the tuna onto the bread. The tuna is in that giant metal tub with the white puddle of tuna water, like a tuna gazpacho. Very appetizing. I'd love to ask them for a glass of that tuna water, or maybe bring in a really long straw and just start drinking it. Too much? Did I cross the line? I was reading this guy's book until he brought up the drinking tuna. I found it offensive. My fiancé is allergic to tuna water. It's nothing to joke about. Subway built its reputation as a healthy alternative, mostly through the successful weight loss of spokesman Jared Fogel. We all know the story of Jared. Jared lost all that weight eating only Subway sandwiches. This makes me kind of wonder what Jared was eating before he started going to Subway. Cases of donuts, maybe? We all like Jared. He seems like a decent guy. But deep down, we all secretly want to see the fat Jared again. Come on, Jared. We all struggle. Eat a burger. I can't imagine how desperate Subway must be to keep Jared thin. Merry Christmas, Jared. Here's another treadmill and a bag of laxatives. Dig in, buddy. Do you mind if I leave this case of diet pills here for a couple years? Feel free to help yourself. But Jared's hung in there. He's been a Subway spokesman for so long, there's a generation of kids who don't even know about the fat Jared. I have a 10-year-old nephew who thought Jared was the owner of Subway. I explained that Jared was a big fat guy who ate all these Subway yogis and now he's thin. Even my nephew was like, well, that's bull crap. I'm not saying Jared didn't lose the weight. I'm just suspicious that Jared hasn't aged in 15 years. I don't feel sorry for Jared. I feel sorry for every other guy in the United States who happens to be named Jared. I'm sure some of them have started to tell people, actually, my name is pronounced Gerard. Of course, Jared didn't lose the weight just eating Subway sandwiches. He switched from eating burgers and fries every day to eating Subway sandwiches every day. So as a result, we think of going to Subway as a healthy activity.
Well, I could go jogging or I could go to Subway and have a meatball sub.
What level of denial are we in where we view eating a meatball sub as a healthy alternative to a hamburger? Isn't a meatball sub just five hamburgers rolled into balls, covered in cheese, and put on a bun that can hold five hamburgers? There's always an open door behind the counter at Subway, revealing a back room. What's going on back there? I know it's not the kitchen, because the kitchen is the toaster oven. Do you think maybe Jared is back there? Is he secretly running all the Subway shops like the Wizard of Oz?
I'm the great and powerful Jared.
More likely, it's probably a safe room for all the employees to hide when the health department shows up. Eat fresh. Arby's. Arby's is famous for its roast beef. You've probably driven by the Arby's hat sign, which I always found confusing. The food tastes like eating a hat? I always thought someone had to eat their hat when they lost a bet. Maybe the bet was that Arby's used real roast beef.